platform.
Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Hello, folks. This is Dave Gahari, and I hope I'm coming through loud and clear. It's 6:02 p.m. Central Time on, all right, thank you, Liz, on March 24. Again, wow, 1 week left, 1 Sunday left in March. That's the 31st. We'll be here. And then hello, April. And then hello, you know, God, we're getting close to summer already. And I don't get it. This is the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. And if you go to speakfreeradio.com, you will be able to listen to the show right there at the top. Excuse me. If you're on your phone, you can click on that phone icon. And then you can use that gadget to go along. On the speakfreeradio.com homepage, you see schedule, and it shows you what's playing 7 days a week, because we're a 24/7 radio station. And you can see, of course, the Dave and Duke Call-In Show is now for 2 hours, followed by some more program, which isn't on there right now, but will be in the coming weeks. We're going to be doing a big revamp to the schedule, and at 11 o'clock till 1, and this is all in Eastern time, is Incendiary Radio with Robert Ravolt. And you can go and take a look at all of the days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you click on the call and chat tab, that's how you get into any of the shows, into the waiting room, where you can come in and ask the host or hosts a question or comment. So for this show, obviously, you click on the Dave and Duke Call-In Show icon, and you come into the studio there. If you click on podcasts, you'll see all the little icons there, the shows. They're all up to date. You can click on them and listen to the previous shows, like, for example, the original programming of today, which was Bloodlines. That show is already archived. And, of course, the Hoax Busters from yesterday and the Fetch from yesterday. And this show will be archived right after it's done. That's about it. Let me see. Yes, let me tell you that this show, of course, and this is for the new listeners, is a call-in show where anyone from around the world can ask a question or make a comment to Dr. David Duke. And he has 2 minutes to answer the question. And then about 15 seconds before that 2 minutes is up, you'll hear this sound. And on that two-minute mark, you'll hear it again. And that means that it's time to wrap up. Now, of course, it depends on how many folks are in the studio waiting to get at him. So it is dependent on that. The ongoing challenge that we have is that if anyone can let us know of a more significant existential threat to humanity other than organized international Jewry, to humanity and to free speech, let us know and we'll quit the show. This is an actual challenge. Lately, there's been a lot of stuff coming out about this topic that, you know, for example, Dave has been talking about for many decades, and it's becoming more commonplace, which obviously is great. But prior to that, it was very censored and esoteric. But now that more and more folks are beginning to recognize that this threat is real, and the actual players of organized international Jewry are brazenly coming out and showing their faces and showing their agenda, It's we've entered into a new realm, so it's very interesting. But at any rate, that's the challenge, and also alongside that challenge is if anyone can let us know of a more effective deliverer of that message other than Dr. David Duke, you let us know, and we'll quit. Ryan Masano's show is going to start next weekend, Nick. So we had some technical things happening, but it's going to be next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, on those same times that I told you about. My good friend, how are you this evening?
I'm fine. How are you, Dave? I'd like to change one aspect of it.
Yes.
If we get somebody better, that's fine, but I won't quit. I'll follow.
Yeah, sure, but that's not going to happen. But sure, sure, we could pretend. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, sure.
I'll be happy to.
I know you will, but it's not going to happen. Had a rough weekend this weekend, Dave.
Oh yeah, what happened?
Putting rough, and as far as work wise, putting the finishing touches on Kessler's Charlottesville book. Right. You know, and you're in there, of course, because you were there at August 12, 2017. Protest, yeah. Anti-white, events that were occurring there, that still occur there, and that still occur with force across the country.
On that book, it's an important book.
Oh, absolutely, very important.
And the input, and what I really try to get over to people is don't let these Jews change the narrative of something that was actually an incredible event. Yes, it was spoiled in the end, and our people were arrested, and they were attacked by communists and so forth. But the fact that so many people came out and to stand up for our people, for our heritage, and stand up openly on the Jewish question, which nobody else does, but people were certainly able to do that at this event because they were able to shut down the rally, because they were able to arrest us, doesn't make it a terrible defeat anymore that Thermopylae was a defeat for Leonidas and the courageous Greeks that died at Thermopylae or that lost that battle. The truth is it was a very important point. It was one of the biggest rallies, one of the most important rallies, and they had to use dirty tricks. They had to use oppression to stop us. And by the way, the left always makes martyrs of those kind of situations. And those people who went to prison or went to jail or were hurt and all the others that went through it, they went after working so hard to create this thing. And it was a great job done by Jason Kessler and many others. Those people, they deserve a lot of thanks. I wasn't one of the organizers of the event. I was invited to it. And I was happy to attend it and support it and promote it. But, it was a great event. And all the people that were involved in the groundbreaking event should be honored. And I think historically they'll build statues to them one day. That's what I
hope. I hope so, man. I hope so. It takes a lot out of you emotionally, to go over the stuff that happened leading up to it, during and after, especially after.
Oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was, of course, I was there the whole time, so I know exactly what happened, and what happened was unconscionable, what they did. It was a Jewish mayor. It was a completely controlled, situation by the enemy. We had won a legal right to demonstrate there, to be in the park. The communists out there, the Antifa, Jewish, and by the way, Antifa is a very old, historic Jewish organization. And in fact, even the Forward newspaper or the magazine, the Forward, actually talks about Antifa as a Jewish organization, how they use Jewish songs, and they have roots back to the communist Antifa in Germany, against the National Socialists and so forth, just communists. And this is all true. And they promised violence. They stated that, violent things. In fact, in these demonstrations, they say bullets are the only thing that will stop these people. Direct threat to assassination, to shooting, to killing, to a mass murder. They said these things. They announced these things. They said they were going to shut it down. They said they were going to, you know, to stop so-called racism or our national socialism. It wasn't really national socialism that was going on there. It was Europeans standing up for our heritage, our rights, our freedoms, our future. And the truth is, not just for European mankind, but the Jewish control over European mankind and the great power of the United States and the power of the American military and the American government and the economic authority they have, the economic incredible brutal power they have. They can make or bankrupt or sanction or destroy any country they want economically. They can do it. They can defame anybody they want to through the ADL or through the media, or they can deplatform anybody they want to. They can control
through the U.S. government.
Yeah, through the U.S. government and through this corporate elite that controls so-called the tech companies. And it, you know, it used to be said that it was called historically, you know, the military-industrial complex. But I'm telling you, it's not the military-industrial complex. In fact, it seems like the left, because the Jews control the left just like they control the right. And they want to tell the left that don't call this what it is, Jewish racism, Jewish supremacism, Jewish hatred, Jewish effort to control the world. I mean, Jews are guilty of, first with communism, then through Zionism. They are guilty of everything they accuse the National Socialists of doing. And these are the true Nazis. Now, when I say Nazis, they weren't the people of Germany. That would be a slight on the people of Germany to say that they were like these Jews. But what they were like the Hollywood version of National Socialists, of the Germans. That's exactly what they're like. They're just as bad, worse perhaps even than the Hollywood version. Because there's nothing, I mean, the National Socialists would never have ever gone on television and did like Netanyahu did, like the former Secretary of the Defense Department of Israel, the former Secretary of State saying we're going to starve, murder, not feed, not give water to, not give medicine to, bomb hospitals, you know, shooting down and murdering and blowing to bits tens of thousands of Palestinian men, women, and children. And then they brag about it, and they glory in it, and they mock it. The Germans didn't do that, by the way. They would have been ashamed.
Imagine if they did.
Yeah, well, exactly.
They would actually have true atrocity stories.
Yeah, that's right.
What a joke. Dave, let's get to the calls. It's quarter after. All right, we're going to bring in Goose. Goose, the floor is yours, my friend.
Hey, how's it going, Daves?
Dave.
The Daves.
The Daves, there you go. You want to talk about what you just wrote about there?
Yeah, man, I got to comment on it. We got a lot of these big, shit for brain liberal accounts on Twitter, these communists. You know, calling the good German soldiers in World War II, where there were some bad ones. I'm sure there was a handful or two of them. But, you know, comparing these Zionist, demonic Zogbots that are killing innocent people right now in Palestine.
Right.
I really think we need to get away from this, the Jews and the Nazis narrative. It drives me insane.
Well, that's right. But you know what? I think we have to use a little jujitsu, and we should turn this just like I try to do with the racist card, right? I try to do with this supremacy card. Because when you think about, you know, they call us white supremacists. We don't call ourselves white supremacists. We never really called ourselves white supremacists. We call ourselves white civil rights workers, white nationalists, white people who want to preserve their own culture, their own nation like anybody else. We don't call ourselves supremacists.
Yeah, Americans that don't want to be genocided.
Right, exactly. And these Jews are, you know, so the truth is that today an anti-Semite is somebody who objects to Jewish genocide of tens of thousands of Palestinian children, women, innocent people. I mean, that's what an anti-Semite now is defined as. So, I mean, so what I want to say to you is that, yeah, National Socialists wanted to preserve their heritage, their German Christian heritage, which they did. They wanted to preserve European values. They didn't want to control the world. The Second World War was not about trying to control the world. It was trying to say that Germans who were taken away from their country by the Versailles Treaty, which was an act of violence against the German people, which was an act of absolute repression against them. You can't take people who live for 1,000 years in territory, a city of Danzig, for instance, or Silesia, or, you know, East Prussia, or any of the people. You can't take them and say, we're going to take you out of your country. Or we're going to make you a hated minority in another country that hates you as an old enemy. And we're going to, you know, you're going to be just total slaves in that country. It was 25 years since the end of the First World War. So, I mean, these people still were not even allowed to join their homeland. They actually divided the country of Germany, where you couldn't even have a land route between, say, Berlin or northern Germany and East Prussia. It was all a contiguous territory for hundreds of years, and yet they didn't even have a highway, a land corridor to get to their own country. You can't make this up, folks. And the collective punishment on Germany was terrible. But the point I'm trying to make here, and it's really important for me to make it, I think it's a great thing. I like it when I love it when Roger Waters gets up there and says, you know, Israel's got a Nazi government. It's a Nazi state. It is a Nazi state, but it's not a Nazi state meaning that it's anything to do with National Socialism. It's a Nazi state as the way they define their worst enemy, which was the National Socialists of Germany, the way they portray their worst enemy and the worst propaganda, the most sick, you know, propaganda that you can imagine. They are exactly what they portray the Germans were in terms of Hollywood. They are truly Hollywood Nazis. And in fact,
yeah, they project what they really are.
Yeah, exactly.
Projection.
I think that's a great weapon we can use. I think it's a great propaganda weapon or you know, a great weapon to show what's really going on here. Because
I just feel like the Wehrmacht has been so slandered over the last 80 years that
I make it clear whenever I say that, you know, look, we do have a threat of Nazism. But Nazism, the way it was portrayed, as you know, by Hollywood, or the mainstream media, or by major academia, or by all this Jewish propaganda, is not what National Socialism was. You know it. I know it. Anybody who studies history knows it, knows that the real mass murderers of historic times were Jewish communists. And we know that there's no people on earth.
The problem is, Dave, is 98% of these retards don't know that, you know?
Well, that's right. And that's what we can explain to them. I say, here's the fact that the most anti-Semitic book, according to the Jews, is not even the Protocols of Zion or my book, Jewish Supremacism or My Awakening. They consider the most anti-Semitic book the Old Testament. And the truth is that the way that the Germans saw the Jews is exactly the way that early Christians saw the Jews. And they were persecuted by those Jews. It's the same way Jesus Christ himself saw the Jews as a group. The Pharisees, which were the elite of the Jews, just like the, you know, the billionaire Jews are the elite of the Jews today. I mean, Christ understood that the so-called oral law, which was the Talmudic law. Now, the Talmud is the major religious book of the Jews. It says wonderful, sweet things in it, like the best of the Gentiles must be killed. And they explain it in the Talmud very clearly. They say, just as the best of snakes must have their heads crushed. The Talmud speaks nothing but hatred And it is truly the most vile hatred in the world. The Germans didn't spend their time, you know, just hitting the Jews every day like the Jews hit Gentiles every day in their religion, the way that Jews celebrate the massacres of the Gentiles in their religion. You know, when we celebrate peace and love and Christ coming for all mankind and all these other things and brotherly love and kindness and peace and all that, peace on earth, goodwill toward men at Christmas, they celebrate Hanukkah, which is a celebration of a Jewish rebellion, like a Jewish form of ISIS that killed many, many Jews. It killed Syrians. It killed Greeks. And they didn't kill them because these Greeks or Syrians were trying to hurt Jews. They killed them because they were nice to the Jews, because they actually let their children intermarry with them. They taught them education in their schools. You know, they did everything they could for them, and they saw that as a threat. I mean, the Hanukkah thing is a celebration of a mass murder that took place. And the recap.
Yeah, they all are. Same as Purim. They're all about celebrating genocide. Yeah. That the Jews did.
Yeah, same as Purim. And by the way, to be really frank about it, and again, I'm not going to go through all the aspects of the Old Testament, but I do know there is a New Testament. I knew there is a New Covenant. That's what the New Testament really is. And I knew that God, through his son, Jesus Christ, and I think that all Christians are supposed to believe this, whether they do or not, that's up to them, right? But I tell you one thing, if you would read the New Testament, even Jews themselves, like Boteach, the same Boteach that talked about how the Palestinians were trying to, they were shooting 700 vaginas, which was a total lie. I mean, it's ridiculous. These Jews make up crap. They open their mouth, you know, and crap comes out.
Yeah, the 40 beheaded babies, right?
Yes, it was all a lie.
Nonsense.
But the thing to remember is that the ultimate racist on earth, Judaism is all about genealogy. It's all about that. Not only are they supposed to be the favorites of God, which God has something else to say about that. That's God's only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, came to the world, right? To tell people that everyone could get the salvation of Christ. And that's why the Jews rejected him, because they wanted a Messiah to rule over everybody, to massacre millions and millions of Christians. Just read Revelation, read the talk about the Antichrist and so forth. And
they wanted a general, not a peace loving savior, right?
Yeah, well they wanted a mass murderer. They wanted from Christ.
A genocidal king.
Right. And Christ said no. Christ said to them, in fact, one of the most classic is John 8:44, where Christ says to them, he said, ye and ye father are the sons of the devil, the lust of ye father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his very essence. He's the father of the lie. And that's exactly what these Jews, just like all the lies they've had about, you know, October 7 and the whole thing. October 7 proves Jewish genocide and murder. Only 36 children died out of 1,100 or 1,200 or whatever the figure was.
Well, 36. Thanks, guys. Right. I'm gonna pop down, and happy Palm Sunday.
13,000 children.
Happy Palm Sunday to my Christian brothers.
Thank you.
There you go. Yeah.
Compare that.
Yes, we'll get you back in, Goose.
Jewish children. 36 Jewish children, and most of them were friendly foul, compared to the 13,000,
but they're not human.
Little boys and girls.
They're animals.
That's what they say. That's exactly what the Jews say, and that's what they even said specifically for their leaders. Germans didn't say that about the Jews.
No. Dave, it's coming out, buddy. All right, Dave, we got Jimmy. Jimmy, the floor is yours, my friend.
Hey, Dave Gaharry, how you doing? And David Duke, okay. Dr. Duke. I like to hear about the Palm Sunday. I went to church today, and man, I tell you what, when you go to, it's Catholic Church, and they really make it clear, you know, what happened. And it really stuck in my head all day, just the way.
It's called the Passion Play, and it's really... It's a bloodlust. It's almost like the other day I watched again. I've seen it about three or four times. So there's a movie that I would really suggest for people to see. Al Pacino starts. Jeremy Iron stars in it. He's a really good, great actor. And it's a great movie about this these rapacious Jews who want the pound of flesh of the Gentile, which they hated. And it's a great story. It's a Shakespearean story. Now, nowadays, they try to interpret it. So they tried to make sure they use the quotations of Al Pacino is plays the Shylock Jew, right? And he says, and he's trying to defend himself, right, to the other Jews and to the, you know, it's basically the audience. And he says, oh, does a Jew, bleed when he's pricked? Does he, you know, laugh when he's tickled? Does, you know, what he's, does he suffer? Whatever. Like, but the truth is, if you actually read the Shakespearean play, it's a magnificent play. And it just shows the guy is totally a man of dark heart who was even though the loan, the bond that was given by Antonio for his friend could have a marriage party. Even though the bond was given to this Jew and the Jew made him sign that you could take a pound of flesh, he wasn't willing to take the money back. He wasn't willing to take, you know, three times what the money that he loaned, you know, to Antonio, which to give to his friend as a Christian act of niceness to his friend who was trying to win a wife, a beautiful woman that whose father died and she was looking for a suitor and anyway, so it was amazing film, and all the good people win in the end, the bad people lose. And so this is said, you know, for years the Jews fought against that play. They tried to ban it in Britain. They tried to ban it in New York. The state of New York banned the play for a while. I mean, you can't make this crap up. These Jews, because they saw it as so anti-Semitic. But over the years, so many people have seen the play and so many people knew about the play. They realized that wouldn't work. So when they were running on PBS all of the plays of Shakespeare, they couldn't leave out Merchant of Venice. If they left that one out, then they would have said, well, what are they trying to cover up, right? So instead, they ran the play, but then they had this big, long section before and after the play about how really the play was sympathetic toward Shylock. It wasn't sympathetic to Shylock. It was sympathetic to the Gentiles, who Shylock was determined to destroy and to kill. And by the way, I don't think I'm giving anything away. It's one of the most popular plays ever, so you should know the end of it. The good people won in the win in the end. And so what they did was Shylock said to them, they said, okay, you know, I want my bond. I want my pound of flesh, and I get to cut it from wherever I want to. He also says in the film and in the play, he says, I'm going to cut it, you know, nearest to his heart, you know, it's going to kill him, basically. I can take any pound of flesh I want.
Wow.
So finally, one of the barristers, very, very clever, and in the movie they portray her as a woman pretending to be a guy. And one of the barristers said, okay, Mr. Shylock, all right. Yes, you've won it. You've won your bond. You can take his pound of flesh. And so Shylock begins sharpening his knife like this ravenous evil Jew. So he's ready to take the life of Antonio. And he's getting ready to do this, right? And he says, one thing, though, Mr. Shylock, what does the bond say? And he reads it, that a pound of, that you have a right to take a pound of flesh, right? And then he says, yeah, I have the right to take a pound of flesh. And so the jurist, in the sense of justice, says, okay, then if you want to follow the bond, and I'll take three times what the bond's worth, if you want that, then you can take a pound of flesh. But you're not allowed to take a drop of blood. That's all you're allowed to take. And if you take a drop of blood, if you take the man's life, you will be tried for murder. and you forfeit all your bond, and you will be tried, and you will be, you know, convicted of murder. So that was pretty interesting. And then Shylock ends up saying, well, okay, I'll take the 3 times the amount that he loaned to the Goyim with the usury. But then they say, nope, you're not going to get it. You know, in fact, you're going to give it up. You're going to give it all up because this is an evil thing that you were trying to do. You were trying to destroy, and you were attempting to kill a sovereign of this land. You don't have a right in a commercial agreement to take somebody's life, obviously, in a government of laws. And so this was a really amazing movie. It stars Al Pacino, like I said, who plays Shylock. He does a good job. And he loses his daughter. He loses his gold. His daughter also steals all of his gold. And she's portrayed as a decent woman, right? Who despises her father, and he marries a, you know, again, Gentiles are the way we are. It's okay. You can marry the Jewish daughter. It's okay for Jews to preserve their race and not to say that they could preserve their people Jews to say, for instance, that, oh, if their daughter marries a Gentile or a non-Jew, we're going to cover the mirrors and we're going to give her a funeral. And that's how hard these Jews are, and how much it's forbidden in Israel. It just doesn't even hardly happen. It's rare. So this is a great film, and it's a great story. And I urge all of our listeners to enjoy that. Read the play by Shakespeare. Learn it so you understand the language and the difficulty in the language with the Old English. But learn it, appreciate it, and marvel in it, because it's a great study of the Jewish psyche, of Jewish racism, of Jewish supremacism, of Jewish hate, and Jewish perfidy. It's an incredible play. Civilization, William Shakespeare.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Jim. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Great people in our history, how many of them were so anti-Semitic? Dostoevsky, I mean, we just keep going on and on and on. I have a great book of famous men on the Jewish question. Just about every famous philosopher, leader, history of Western civilization condemned the Jews as what they are, a nation of usurers.
It's the Jewish problem, not the Jewish.
They've always been involved in organized crime too, Dave. Yes, you know, that's nothing we've never talked about. I mean, the biggest organized crime group in America, this is a good quiz question we should ask our audience today. What was the biggest and most murderous, most dangerous, most corrupt organization, and in fact it was a murder for hire organization, that flourished in the United States and whose leaders ultimately became the most powerful syndicate, the most powerful mafia of criminal finance and criminal drug dealing and criminal activity in the world? What was the name of the organization and who ran it? Was it, you know, was it Italian? Was it an Italian group, or did it happen to be a Jewish group?
Yeah.
And who was the most? Here's a good question for the audience here. We can even give them a copy of the person who wins it first ones that can say it, and get a copy of Jewish Supremacism, which I know you have some copies of, Dave.
No.
Can we?
No. Because the value of that book is much higher than...
Well, okay, yeah. Whatever. But anyway, I'll find an extra passage of them.
How's when you come up with your next book, right?
Well, anyway, so let's just say what we were going to say. But the point is, well, we won't do the book, but we'll, you know, but we will say this, you know, who was the most important, the richest gangster who didn't go to prison, by the way, who ended up getting away with everything, and it was the biggest criminal, way, way bigger than, and it wasn't Al Capone, way bigger than Al Capone. Who does anybody know his name? There you go.
I do, but I'm not going to say it. Okay.
Well, we'll see if anybody else.
Yeah, let's bring in Michael. Michael from California.
Meyer Lansky.
You got it, Michael. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Michael.
You get a book.
You win the prize. You win nothing.
I'll send you a whole
I'll send you a
whole personal paragraph of commendation.
I get to meet Dr. Duke in person. How about get to meet him in person someday? Come down to the French Quarter. Come down to the French Quarter and have a beer with you. How about that?
That would be super.
I'll let you buy me a beer
or I'll buy you a beer, one of the two.
Okay, so we got Easter coming up, and yes, Christ was crucified by the Jews. We know that. But you also have to add, David, that he died for us to forgive all our sins, that he shed his blood on the cross for us.
Of course.
Us Gentiles, especially us Gentiles. But
Paul said it this way. He said, as good as it's ever been said. He said, but I should be accursed because of my race, because of the evils that my race has done to Jesus Christ. The evils that my race, in fact, remember, one of the most famous passages from the New Testament is when the Jews said, his blood be on us and our children. And when they demanded that Pontius Pilate, let's set free the criminal, the highwayman, Barnabas, I guess.
Pilate didn't want to do it.
Pilate didn't want to do it.
Barabbas.
I got that a little off.
So,
go ahead.
An attack on Moscow. This is Jewish.
Let's talk
right?
about that. They're I want really, to talk about it. Yeah.
Let's talk about Russia. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to open the show on that, so I'm glad that you brought that up. That's a good start of the question for your questions. Let me tell you something, folks. I know who did this. I know exactly who did this. First off, it wasn't ISIS. It wasn't ISIS. It wasn't ISIS. What have you heard from ISIS in the last few years? Why would they be doing this? Wouldn't they right now, if they're really what they say they were about fighting against Israel and the Jews and all these things, wouldn't they be doing something against Israel? Would they really be attacking Israel right now? I mean, Russia right now? Would they really be doing that? Come on, folks. Think about it for a second. And listen, ISIS itself was sponsored. And by the way, Al-Qaeda. Now, I want to raise a little alarm bell for people who are listening in America, around Europe, or the world. Let me take a little water here. That we got to make something real clear here, folks. Okay. Who was behind Al-Qaeda? The same Al-Qaeda that did 9/11. If Al-Qaeda did 9/11, I think there's evidence that they were certainly involved in it. I don't think it was all an inside job, frankly. But I do believe Al-Qaeda was involved in it. Who was behind Al-Qaeda? Well, Al-Qaeda was supported by the Jews, by the American government, to go kill white Christian Russians in Afghanistan. Because Jews hated Russians, because the Russians were in the process at that time during the Afghanistan war of overthrowing communism. And the first thing they did in Russia starting in the 40s and 50s was overthrowing the Jews out of communism. As soon as they got rid of the Jews, the Jewish mass murderers that killed millions upon millions of Russians, it was inevitable that the church would be restored. Khrushchev himself, in fact, who was head of the Communist Party, he got up in front of the Duma, and he actually talked about the Jewish mass murderers. And they actually made a crime of Zionism as a treasonous offense in Russia. That's how much the Jews, they went from controlling the country, killing tens of millions of people, including also in Ukraine, where they killed many millions of people, 11 million people, much more than the Holocaust, right? Almost double the Holocaust. But you don't hear about that. That was led by Lazar Kaganovich, who was a deputy premier of the Soviet Union, is a Jew. I mean, that's the reality of it. Now, the fact is that they supported with arms, guns, weapons, and billions of our dollars, Osama bin Laden. And Osama bin Laden was not only was he against, the Russians, being a Muslim country and communist too. Of course, a lot of things were going on different there. But not only was he against them, but he was also big, big time against America. And he even did interviews talking about how America was supporting the Jewish state of Israel and killing their people. He was talking, in fact, even before the whole 9/11 happened. Before that happened, I just want to call your attention to something, everybody who's listening, who's got any sort of mind left in your head at all. What would you think about anyone? What would you think about any government? What would you think about any person that would be bragging and saying that we're responsible for it and it's a good thing? It's definitely worth it that we killed 500,000 children. And that's exactly what our Secretary of State from the United States of America said. In fact, said it to the whole world on 60 Minutes, interviewed by Leslie Stahl. I'm not making this up, folks. It sounds like something somebody would make up. It sounds like something that couldn't be true. I certainly doesn't sound very true for someone that grew up believing in America and believing in the goodness of America, the truth of America, the justice of America, the idea that America was on the side of right and good and greatness, right? No, no. Madeleine Albright, our Jewish Secretary of State, gets on 60 Minutes. Leslie Stahl, they go there. They go to Iraq. They show that at least 500,000 children died. Now, it's probably over 1 million that died altogether. Children died, old people died. That's what happens when you have a sanction on a desert kingdom where you don't really have much agriculture. You don't have anything to eat. You don't have medicines when these are sanctioned. So these kids, they went to the hospitals and they studied it along with the United Nations. Everybody knew what was going on. And they showed that 500,000 children were dying. They had little girls and little boys, 1 year old, 2 year old, 3 year old, 4 years old, had pneumonia or infections or flu or whatever, right? And they couldn't even get antibiotics because of our sanctions. And parents and their grandparents and their mothers and fathers, I mean, they had to watch their children just strangled to death in their own, body fluids. I mean, could you imagine this? Could you imagine if that was your child? 500,000 children. And Leslie Stahl says, we've seen that 500,000 children have died.
The Jewish influence of our United States.
Yeah, and she just wanted to make sure, you know, so Leslie Stahl said, she wanted to give her a chance to maybe, you know, confess this and kind
of. No remorse.
And she says, well, do you think that's worth it? Do you think it's, we didn't like Saddam Hussein, whatever reason. And Saddam Hussein never missed one piece of caviar, I'm sure, right? Or steak or anything good, you know, or expensive champagne. He never missed anything. But do you think it's worth it for us to starve to death and cause the death of 500,000 babies and children? Do you think it's actually worth it? And interestingly enough, Madeleine Albright, little disgusting, vile little Jewish troll, she stops and thinks for a second. And Stahl just lets her think. She's thinking, well, she's going to have to come up with some sort of excuse or something. And Leslie Stahl says, well, it's a difficult question, she says. But yeah, yes, we think it's worth it. We think it's worth it. That's
sick.
The spokesman
sick.
For America.
That's sick.
That's yeah. The spokesman for America. So, yeah. Folks, look, so going back into Russia, 135 at least, is probably going to be more like 200 dead. And these are beautiful Russians. And by the way, I think every single person that died in that theater were people like America used to look like in our major cities. At a typical concert you had seen in New Orleans, you know, when I was a young man. I remember the Beatles came. I remember how that audience looked at the City Park Stadium when the Beatles came to New Orleans. I was there. 61 or two, something like that.
64 was it for sure. Yeah.
There you go. And whatever it was. But I do remember the Beatles, and I do remember the stadium. You know, it was every person there was a European. And that's
white,
the way America
white.
Used, yeah. That's how America was. It was in 1964. That's how America was, even all the way up to the time that I went to LSU. In fact, from the time in 1970, and that was after 3 years, 4 years in 70 and 71 would be 4 years.
Even the mid 70s, Dave.
That's right. At the Leonard, we were still Leonard almost 90%.
Yeah, Leonard Skinner in Oakland. It was all white. 50,000.
Yeah, go
white.
See that video. Just look up Leonard Skinner in Oakland with a big giant Confederate flag. That's when America was America, right? But the Jews subverted us. And I had another thing that I wanted to talk about tonight too. That I thought about last night. I had a discussion with Dr. Slattery about this, private discussion with him on the phone, and. So way back in 1970, 72, something like that, they came out with this film called Little Big Man. It was a big Jewish film by this Jewish director. What was his name? I can't even think. He was a big Jew. And it was in the whole thing, you know, some of the screenplays, the screenplay was written by Jews. And it was the most disgusting, hateful, vicious, horrific movie against white Americans, against our pioneers, against our people, against our country I've ever seen in my life. I didn't see this back then. I knew it was a piece of crap then, but I always wanted to see it just so I was able to see what was exactly in it and how the Jewish hatred for us was just worn on their sleeves in this movie. Let me just give you a couple examples from this movie. From those, I think this is a fascinating subject, and this shows you how much these Jews hate us, okay? So obviously we know. When we were kids, actually, we respected the Indians a lot. We did. We saw them as courageous. They were, you know, they were living in this country, obviously. There were different tribes. Of course, Indians, other tribes. Tribes were the same things as races today, you know, just as tribes of Europeans were different. And the truth is that these Jewish tribes fought each other. They conquered each other. They did that. This was a normal part of history. White people came to the Americas. And again, the population was very tiny compared to today. Tiny compared to today. And it was vast amounts of land, and these were crowded into Europe, and they had very bad conditions, and they came to a new land, and they tried to be decent to the Indians. Look, a good example is the Thanksgiving that the Europeans offered their Indian neighbors. They invited them to their Thanksgiving celebration. You didn't find any Jews doing that with the Palestinians when they took their land, let me tell you, in Israel. But, so this was part of America, right? But we did honor them in many ways, and we gave them vast areas of land, and the biggest massacres actually in the history of the conflict between Europeans and Indians were not giant slaughters of Europeans, of Indians by Europeans. It was slaughters of Europeans by Indians, along with a lot of other Indians. The greatest massacre in American history was Fort Mims. It's just down the road from me. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours away by car near Mobile, Alabama, Fort Mims. It was a big fort near Mobile, Alabama. And the Creek Indians were at war with people, and they were known for their massacre of men, women, and children. And by the way, I'm not saying a white person never massacred an Indian man, woman, or children. I'm sure that's happened. But at the same time, generally speaking, American troops, if an American troop, killed, like, say, part of the British, the people supporting Britain, or raped them, they would be executed themselves by George Washington. And the Europeans had that value for a long, long time, right? But the point is that I'll just give you the first scene in the movie. Okay, the first scene in the movie is Dustin Hoffman, the little Jew rat that he is. So he's going out west with his family. his mother's father shall mind. So the father's murdered, the mother's murdered, some of the family members are murdered, right? He and his sister survived, right? And then so the sister and Dustin Hoffman are there together. Now this shows you how evil these Jews are. It's unbelievable, right? So the sister of Dustin Hoffman, she's supposed to be a little girl. She probably looks all of 9 or 10 or 11 or 12 years old, right? And she's a sister of Dustin Hoffman. She's not very pretty, of course. That's the way they like to view our people anyway. But she's not very pretty, but she's okay. I mean, she's normal-looking kid. Kids aren't necessarily look like pretty. And so the first scene you see in this place is they're hiding out from the Indians, and this other Indian comes up. But the other Indian is a noble person. He's a noble. He's not one of the other tribe that killed them. He's of another tribe. And by the way, his tribe was called human beings. So all the way during the movie, it's about how the Indians are human beings, while Europeans and white Christians are not even Europeans. But anyway, that's another subject. So this is a perfect example of this. Now this is a film that was even before the ratings. So a lot of kids went to this movie. It was like a cowboy Western. It was about Custer's Last Stand. It was called Little Big Man. And it was about a white guy being captured by the Indians and then later being the only white survivor of Custer's Last Stand, Little Bighorn. So this little girl, right? So now I can imagine many families saw this movie. Many kids saw this movie, right? And whether your kids or not see this movie, the presentation of what they portrayed here in this opening scene is a horrific idea. Think about this now for a second. Okay, so the girl is there. Now, she's like I say, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 years old, right? This is supposed to be a typical white Christian girl, right? And we know how faithful, how honest Christian they're raised, and how moral women were raised in those times. I mean, most women, when they got married, had their virginity, believe it or not. I mean, whether you agree with that or not, folks, I mean, that's, you know, this was the way people lived. This is the way people did things, right? And they certainly didn't talk like a bunch of sailors and not talk about, you know, and looking forward to getting raped. In this scene, the little girl, right, she's upset because she was hoping the Indians were going to rape her. Let that sink in, folks. She's upset because she wanted to be ravished by the Indians. She wanted to be raped by the Indians. I mean, now, for any young kid or any kid or any young woman there who is going to that movie, is this what we want to say? That, oh, here's a young girl, and it's like, oh, that'll be great. That'll be great excitement. So it'll be great if the Indians rape and murder me or rape me or whatever, because then we'll get to be, you know, sexually, you know, raped by a.
It's disgusting.
You can't make this crap up. You just cannot even. How much hatred would it be? Could you imagine if some Jewish kid in a Jewish movie with the Nazis and so forth, a Jewish little girl, whatever, says, oh, look at those handsome, you know, Aryan Nazis. I want to be raped by them. I'm really disappointed. They didn't pay attention to me. They didn't take me and rape me. Wait, you think there would have been a problem with that? They live in this country. They make this damn movie. It's a Jewish production. By the way, the whole production company was a Jewish production company. It was a Jewish thing all the way up and down the line. It was nothing but hate like this during the whole movie. They showed a big scene where the cavalry comes in and kills Dustin Hoffman's wife, right? His little baby that he had with the Indian squaw, whatever. It also showed his other wife to be just a whore, basically. It showed every Christian woman of good repute, beautiful woman, like Faye Dunaway was one of the people. And she's got a slovenly husband, right, who pretend to be moral and so forth. And she's out there trying to screw every guy in town, right? But again, but so there's not any symbol of anybody who's moral or decent if they're white in the film, except Dustin Hoffman, who wants to go kill white people, right? I mean, you can't make it up.
Dave, the Jew has had a free hand to That's pervert this country. Hey, look, I'm going to play, Michael, for you, what you brought up. I think you brought it up. So let's play this quick clip.
I want to get somebody to comment about that scene I told you about with the logo. Can you imagine them putting that kind of stuff?
I remember that movie. I remember
we're running
that.
Up to the top of the hour. So okay, let's watch this quick clip. Here it is.
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
There it is.
All right.
Yeah.
Here's Jesus Christ's own words. Ye and ye fathers are sons of the devil, and the lust of ye father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own nature. He's the father of all lies. You're the sons of the devil, and your father's a murderer from the beginning. We've seen this. What other religion has? Christianity doesn't have massacres of innocent people. Christ didn't say to kill the kids. He said, bring them unto me. I mean, come on.
And they've had Hollywood to perfect the American mind for a century now.
I know. And it's so disgusting.
Exactly.
But when I saw this, yesterday, Sunday yesterday. And when I saw this thing, I just about had tears in my eyes, because I thought about the millions and millions of young, impressionable white people that saw this film, which is just screeching hatred against whites, self-hate. And I thought about all those young white people who have these impressions.
I was 12 years old.
Who were being taught how evil their forefathers were, and how they murdered women and children and all this stuff. They didn't talk about the murders. Again, the biggest massacre was at Fort Mims. Over 500 to 700 Europeans were slaughtered.
Dr. Duke, you know what happened the next year in 1973, what the Supreme Court ruled after that movie came out?
Which one?
1973 is when abortion could be legal.
There you go.
60 million babies have been aborted.
And that was one way to limit, you know, white people. So
thank you, Dr. Duke. I'll let somebody else on. Thank you, Mr. Ghari.
Thanks, Michael. Dave, let's take these top of the station break. And
I'll be right back. I've got to make it quick. I got to go to my door. I got a package. So I'll be right back.
Okay. All right, folks, it is 7 o'clock exactly. See that? Central time, though. And you're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. And you could be listening from from the computer. You could be listening from the phone. Some of you are hearing that smoke alarm beeping. Like I said, I'm going to have to take a drive out there to Louisiana, you know, armed with a holster with 9 volts, you know, around the whole holster, you know, instead of like ammunition, I'll have 9-volt batteries in there. Bring a little ladder and take care of business. Yeah, I did, Mark. At any rate, good show tonight, as always, and a lot of great questions. And let me bring Dave back in, because I have a question for you, Dave.
Okay. We bring it down to earth, Dave Ghari. We bring this thing to earth because, I mean, it's like you a lot of people heard the thing about Madeleine Albright. They've heard different things. We've talked about different movies and propaganda. But when you think about it, the way that you and I frame it, the way that I framed it today about that film and about the evil that they represented in this film, and at every step along the way, white people were presented in the most evil way. And this old Indian chief, he was the most brave, the most courageous, the most honest, the most decent, law-abiding, kind person you could possibly imagine. And by the way, all the women were treated like the way they treat shiksas, Gentile women, which they call whores. That is the Jewish word for a Gentile woman, is a whore. And all the white women, including the children, like I just pointed out, you know, this is how they portray our people. I mean, you can't make it up.
No, it's disgusting. And, you know, they should be
out of
those positions. Yeah,
hate
I want to ask
with
you.
The most with the
exactly.
millions of dollars of ability to make things look like
yep.
they're real.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Exactly. Dave, we know it. We know what they've done.
It's just like the October 7 thing. It's just exactly like that. Here, Jews are killing 13,000 children. 75% to 80% are women and children. Certainly not Hamas people being massacred. Right? Only 36 Jewish children died on October 7. The biggest thing since the Holocaust. Right? And then they got 13,000 Palestinians, but it's those Palestinians that are monsters, right? It's those Palestinians that are ISIS people, right? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know.
And then they make up crap. It's not good enough. Now, I'm sure that there are some people that probably shouldn't have been killed in that group, but nowhere near is it ever as much as the Jews kill.
No,
in the 20th century, or 21st century, in this century, since 2000, at least 15,000 Palestinian men, women, and children have been murdered by these people. 15,000.
Yes.
Not 1,000 or 1,200. 15,000. Right. And thousands and thousands of homes destroyed, and other sufferings and wounded. And then you can take that, multiply it by three, and you can get, now you're going to be up to 45,000 or so that were wounded, kids that suffered. Kids, I mean, lost limbs.
Dave, they are
the chosen.
They're being revealed now. That's why.
Well,
look what happened with Candace Owen.
Well, right? They're being revealed, and I'm glad that they're being revealed. But you know what? That's no consolation for me, because they can be revealed. I want them to be revealed. They got to be revealed so we can stop this. This insanity, which
inhumanity, yeah, inhumanity, because they're not human.
Inhumanity is the right
yes.
word for it.
Yep.
This human rights disaster for the whole world.
Yes.
And we're part of it, and we're guilty of it. You know. And by the way, since it's the very beginning of the show, I wanted to mention something that I talked about the other day too for a moment, which I think was a very interesting point. Okay, I think this was, and this kind of I think has a way of framing this together, right? So. I'm watching this interview the other day, and they talk about the fact of, like, this was Elon Musk. I think I didn't mention on the show, but it's worth mentioning again, because I think this offers some questions that we need to confront in our own lives and make us realize what's really going on in this world right now. So Elon Musk talks about going to visit some of his relatives, I guess some of his nephews or something. And so he goes to see some of his nephews, and they're talking, you know. And he said, it was so shocking. He was so shocking, he said, because one of my nephews actually said, you know, about 9/11, this is shortly after 9/11 happened, he said, my God, you know, do you think it's possible that America deserved it? And so Musk is really shocked. Why would he think that? I mean, why would anybody think that? How could anybody think that? We just had this terrible, terrible attack. But you know what? It's like one of those questions that should be asked about every major event in life. So the question, let's just take that question for a moment, right? So by the standard of Madeleine Albright's statement, which we played for everybody to listen to tonight, where she's talking without a bit of remorse for 500,000 Iraqi children who just like, you know, they're children just like ours, babies, innocents. And she's talking about, oh, it's worth it. Yeah, it's fine. We killed 500,000 babies. 9/11 happened after that. 9/11 happened after that, after those 500,000 babies were killed. Another 500,000 older people and just regular people. After that. So I don't think we did deserve it. And I think, but I think the question that a young person might ask, or a person might ask who's innocent and who wants to know what's going on, is it a legitimate question? Because no, I don't think our innocent deserved it. Just like I don't believe those Iraqi children deserved it. I don't think those Germans who were burned alive in Dresden deserved it. I don't think the children that were burned alive by the atomic bombs near Nagasaki and Hiroshima and even worse, the quarter of a million that got burned alive in Tokyo with the fires, or the people in Dresden somewhere. I don't believe they deserve that. And I don't believe we should tolerate that. I don't think the anywhere from 60 to 80 million people died in the Second World War, that those people didn't deserve it. And the one thing I had about Robert Kennedy when he was talking the other day, where he said, I'd be against all these wars. He said he was against the Ukraine war too, by the way, which is good, right? But he actually defended Israel for a while, but you know, I don't know if he's still doing that. But anyway, but the point is that when you think about these things, I mean, it's like, if I would have been there with Robert F. Kennedy, I would have said, well, let's just be real, Robert. Let's be real now. So you're saying that you would have voted for war. You would have been in favor of a world war, even though you know now, and everybody knows now that lived through that or came after that war, that 80 million people died in that war. 80 million people on both sides. Millions of innocents on our side. Millions of innocents on the other side. Millions of innocents of Russia. Millions of other innocents all over the world died. In Malaysia, in China, millions upon millions and millions of people. And all that came born out of a conflict in Poland, which was simply about self-determination and real democracy. It was about letting people determine their own government and not letting people be enslaved by another government, against any sort of sense of declarations of independence or values or whatever. And so Germany was willing to completely get out of Poland, but they just wanted to have their people in their own city of Danzig, city of a million people, about the size of New Orleans.
Dave, we got calls lined up.
I know, but be united with your people. So that's a good question, isn't it? So knowing that 80 million innocent people died because we didn't settle that by diplomacy, just like we have a 500,000 Ukrainians dying in what's supposed to be a war for Ukraine. It's not a war for Ukraine. It's a war for the Jews. It's a war by the Jewish government of Ukraine. It's a war against the what they consider to be an anti-Semitic government of Russia, because they consider Putin to be anti-Semitic. He went against the Russian oligarchs. He was part of the Soviets that overthrew the Jewish regime that killed tens of millions of Russian Christians. So that's the point. And if you're a human being, if you count yourself as human, like the human beings of that Indian tribe, which they kept trying to ridicule white people by saying that the Indian tribe that she was living with, right, who were so noble and so wonderful, they were human beings, but the white people were just not even human. That is sick. That's exactly what the Jews are saying about the Palestinians. And folks understand something. Just like they don't consider Palestinians to be human beings, they don't consider Russians to be human beings, and they don't consider you white Americans or Canadians or British or French or Germans. They don't consider any of you human beings either. And I can prove that. I can show you that. They believe that we're totally satanic.
Dave, we got to get to the calls, buddy. We got to get to the calls.
I wrapped it up. I think.
All right. All right. All right. We got. Yeah, it was excellent. Jimmy, go ahead, buddy. You got the floor.
Yeah, I think it's all for nothing if the Jews aren't called out by rhinos, conservatives, liberals. I don't care what it is. If there's no solution but calling out the Jews. And I was going to ask you, Dave, you know, and another thing with this freedom of speech, how they're trying to, you know, stop calling out the Jews. The, you know, that's kind of like the way they killed Jesus for the truth. And then I was going to ask you what you thought about the red heifers.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of good questions there. Let's just start with Jesus, I guess. And and remember, I quoted to you from John 8:44. Right, about what Christ said to the rabbis. And by the way, that quotation comes right back with the Pharisees, which were the Jewish elite of Israel, the Kohanim. And the Pharisees immediately, and it says in the Bible, and the Jews answered Christ, you know, saying, you know, talking, calling him an idolater and all the hateful things. And the Jewish Talmud, by the way, says they're torturing Christ for thousands of years. The Jewish magicians raised Christ from the dead. Christ didn't come back from the dead. They raised him from the dead so they could torture this kind, loving teacher, all because Jesus Christ didn't want to kill all of humanity and subvert all humanity to Jewish rule over them. That this is unbelievable, the stuff that's going on, but it's not really unbelievable. It is a dystopian nightmare, but it's a dystopian nightmare that's real. We're living it. The Palestinians are living it. In World War II, millions of Germans lived it. Millions of Russians lived it. Millions of British lived it. Right? This is the craziness. In the First World War, millions lived that. You know, in the mass murders of communism, 100 million people died. That was Jews leading those mass murders. So that's what you got to remember. Also, you mentioned freedom of speech. And what's interesting is because probably one of the most famous and quoted passages from the New Testament comes actually from the book of John, and it comes from the 8th chapter of John, just earlier than the one about the Jews being the father of, you know, the father of the devil, whose father was the devil, who was a murderer from the beginning, right? And so in that passage is, and you all will know it, anybody will recognize it, Christ said to these Jews, he says, and to other listening, right? Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set thee free. You shall know the truth. You know, the truth. And the, in fact, the line about Jesus talking about the father of the lie is one of the most, that's the most famous anti-Semitic quote in all the history of the world. And I think it sums up the reason why Jews have power over us in this world right now. The reason why they've been leading this world to war. The reason why they created communism. The reason why they're doing LGBTism. The reason why they've did all these things. And it did the Sackler family, you know, or did the opium wars right in China, where they exploited and killed millions of Chinese, or the fact that they led the slave trade globally, which is a fact, you know, is because they're murderers. But more importantly, it's because they're liars. It's like Christ said in another place in the New Testament when he said, this is talking to the Pharisees. He said, yeah, you're just like those lighted sepulchers in Jewish cemeteries. You beautiful lights on the outside and marble and everything, but inside full of dead men's bones. That's what Christ said. That's the father of Christianity. That's the Son of God that Christians believe in. Those are the things you got to get straight with. And then
in the book today, that saying was in the Bible. I saw it. Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, buddy. We'll get you back in. All right, Goose.
Well, we have a lot of snippets here. We could just take snippets out of this show and just play them in one video or something. And I think people that would be the biggest hit thing
maybe, people ever have. Goose, you got the floor, buddy.
who wants to do that? Let's take some of those quotes out of the show. We've got a lot of very powerful quotes here in the show, I think.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Yeah.
Hey. How's everybody doing?
How you doing, Goose? Are you hearing what you want to hear from me?
Yeah, man. You're always always spot on, Dave, 100%. Have you ever heard of Devin Stack from Blackpilled?
Yeah, of course. He does good stuff.
Okay. Yeah, he did a really good episode last night on Fred Luker.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dave Gaharie's probably friends with him. He probably knows Fred.
Fred Luker, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it kind of this is kind of a question for both of y'all, because I know Dave probably knows
that video,
him.
But I've talked to Fred, I think, a few times before.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable what these people, these Jews, are allowed to do to these professionals like Fred, like Ernst Zundel. Now they're doing it to, you know, Stu Peters. I know Dave's not a fan. Candace Owen, Nick Fuentes, you know, just to completely. And then most importantly, obviously yourself, Dave. I mean, what they've done to you and Dave Gaharie. It's just, you know, we just got to keep pushing on, you know. But if you could comment on Fred or any of those other people and how they just completely ruin these people's or try to ruin their careers, you know. And that's all.
Well, so what Fred Luker was about, and he got involved in issues investigating the Holocaust. And you can't investigate anything the Jews don't want you to investigate. It's the same reason why Israel, the United Nations, of which America's a part, Europe's all a part, right, wanted to send a team in to look at the evidence and document or prove or disprove, but look at the evidence on this alleged systematic rape by Palestinians of Jewish girls on October 7th. Now, as probably everybody knows, this is the biggest lie ever, and it's a sick, sick lie, and it's one more lie that shows you exactly what Christ was talking about, being the father of the lie. So the idea is this, is that they're trying to justify a genocide, the massacre of tens of thousands of children. So how do you do that? Well, you have to dehumanize the Palestinian people. You have to say that these people are just all savages. They're all evil. They're just all murderers. There's no innocence among them, right? And we got the proof of that because, you know, just like Rabbi Boteach said, you know, who's also sells dildos in his daughter's store. This is a rabbi. His daughter sells dildos, which is part of his company, too. Isn't that nice? Anyway, so Rabbi Boteach says, you know, quote, oh, the Palestinians, they were shooting at 700 vaginas. There's no evidence of any of this. There's no evidence of any rape. Not even a single one of these rapes was forensically proven, even though people do it all the time. They do it in war. They do it in police things. And this wasn't like Palestine, where you got Jewish bombs falling on you every day, where you're trying to document certain things. This is talking about Israel. After in one day they cleared out these people, and for, you know, after one
Dave,
day.
Dave, what about Leuchter? So, or the way you pronounce it is really Luscher.
Well, I just wanted to say that because I wanted to point out that any question. So these people are liars, and Leuchter was an expert on executions and the use of poison gas in executions. And many states, in fact, executed with poison gas, and California, a lot of other places. And he was the greatest authority on using that way. He was an engineer, but he fell into this issue, which he did it for some states. And then he became an expert in it. And, so he was respected. And he was running most of the executions in the country in terms of because he knew how to do it properly with not killing the people there who were doing the execution, you know, making the inmates suffer as least as possible, you know, and take them out quietly and do this. So he was invited to go to Auschwitz. And they did it. They actually did it in the slide, but they brought him to Auschwitz. He had all of his equipment. He brought his forensic evidence, right? And they brought him to Auschwitz, where they had the gas chambers, which they advertised and which they stated and many times were authentic gas chambers. Authentic gas chambers. Now, I'm not going to refute the gas chambers on this program because I won't even be able to go back to Europe if I did. But I am going to tell you the details of this particular case. So it is true that they could be lying about that these were authentic gas chambers, but they weren't. They were something built after the war. That doesn't make it necessarily untrue that the Germans killed any Jews. I think a number of Jews were killed in a lot of places in Europe. And I think a hell of a lot of Germans were killed. I think a hell of a lot of Christians were killed by the Jewish Bolsheviks and blah, blah, blah. So he goes there. And so he's showing all these things. He does the tour. He does all the stuff. And where the authorities there say, and they even ask questions like, are these these were the actual gas? We're in the actual gas chamber where these Jews were herded in, like 200 people packed into this room, standing room only, right? And then they put Zyklon B, which is the cyanide gas, into these vents in the roof. And these Jews were killed. And with a very heavy concentration of Zyklon B, obviously. But so he goes there. So again, it's a big camp and it's like you can walk around, you can wander around and everything. So he looks at the walls, right? And he sees that the walls are made of red brick. And he notices that red brick, the reason why red brick is red brick is because iron is red. If you ever been to the Red River Valley, you'll know what I'm talking about. So the red brick, it's very, very interesting because when you have cyanide gas, which is a very powerful reagent, and you have cyanide gas, when it mixes with the powdered brick, because you've seen how bricks are, it rubs off in your fingers practically, that there becomes a chemical creation called Prussian blue. And it's a famous color that's used in the ink business, right? Prussian blue, where the cyanide with the iron produces this bluish color. And by the way, in the areas of the camp that they were showing the disinfection chambers where bags were put, clothes, bag, just like in prisons, in many American prisons, they used things like this before where you take off your clothes, the clothes would be deloused deloused meaning get the spreaders of the typhus virus off of them or the cholera virus.
Yeah, they were actually trying to save their lives, right?
Right. But the interesting thing was that so they had delousing chambers, which in the camp, right? Which is where they took the carpet bags. They did have carpet bags in the old days, just like they talked about in the war between the states, the Jewish carpet baggers that came down. But so the carpet bags and the other bags, and they had to disinfect them. So they put them in this chamber and they put this disinfectant, which is an insecticide. Zyklon B is an insecticide. And they would use it and they just pile the stuff in the room, the suitcases, bags, purses, clothes, shoes, whatever, and other equipment. So anything is not going to be carrying these lice, which carry these diseases, because they didn't want epidemics. They didn't want to get epidemics themselves. They certainly didn't want the prisoners. They wanted them to work. In fact, right? They weren't trying to kill them. So anyway, so they show this. Let's get my voice back here. Let me get some water. I'm almost done. So he takes the shavings from the delousing chambers. I've seen them myself, by the way. I've been to these delousing chambers, and even some of the camps in Austria where they had delousing chambers. By the way, even though Mauthausen, which was a camp which was alleged to be a death camp where Jews were supposedly gassed by the National Socialists. And in fact, when I visited that camp in the 1980s, when I had a scholarship to head to the Goethe Institute for German history and heritage and Austrian history and heritage. And we went down to the whole group went down to Mauthausen concentration camp. And they were telling all these stories, and they showed us a thing that was a gas chamber and all that. And again, I saw the same thing. The chambers where they did the delousing for the clothes and for the furniture, the bags and everything. Guess what, folks? They had these big hermetic, they were made of metal, you know, this massive iron things, right? And they literally sealed it like a ship, you know, this, how the doors on a ship are supposed to be airtight, you know, and they, where they had the wheel on it and so forth, they had these big wheels and so forth. And this is where they put a lot of these things. And some of these things were big rooms. And it was like, it looked like you're on the Titanic or something with the bulkheads, right? Or in a submarine. And you know that about, you know about that, Dave, for sure. You served on the submarines. But so when this happened, by the way, in some of the areas where you had the red brick on the walls, the red brick, guess what color it was?
It was Prussian blue.
Prussian blue. It was stained, yeah. And he scraped off, you know, the shavings of it, show how deep it went and how, you know, uses and everything like that. And then he did the same thing with the rooms that they said were actual gas chambers.
Yeah, and they made him look like some uneducated fool. And just because he was mostly self-taught, because there was no one that really knew about this stuff. He was entering a new arena, and they used that to bash him just because
he was an engineer. He knew the science, though.
Absolutely. He was a brilliant engineer. He probably had 150 IQ, and they're making him out to be like this retarded goon that just, you know, is obsessed, you know, some Nazi obsessed with, being a Holocaust, what do they call it, denier, right? You know, and that's not the case at all. He went out there and he actually said the thing that what's his name? The other guy in the trial there, Ernst Zundel,
yeah,
said that it took him 2 to 3 years to decide if it was real or fake. And Fred said within a week, it wasn't from what he saw, it's from what he didn't see that made up his mind in under a week. And I thought that was very telling.
Yeah, you know, it's like, let's put it this way. The reason why he did this, I think, was because, first of all, he was a traditional, typical goyim, a typical white Christian who has been educated their whole life, or not educated, diseducated, disinformation their whole life about how wonderful Jews are. Jews would never lie to him about anything, just like we got these Jews on tape from Jewish television programs where Jewish announcers themselves, they showed these Jews, these Jewish soldiers making up these lies about the massacres on October 7th. And they're literally sitting there, they're lying through their teeth. They're crying. They said it's the most horrible thing I ever saw. You said you can't make it up. It's like the movies and all that. And yet they're at kibbutzes, right? Where there were nobody killed in those places. There was nobody. The whole thing was a total fake out, right? And these people were just lying through their teeth. Lying through the teeth. Everything about the beheaded babies, all the rest of it, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, but anyway, so what he wanted to do, and Zundel was another interesting guy of Canada, a wonderful man.
And they put him in prison, what, 2 or 3 times? Like
years and years.
Once in Canada, once in Germany. They expedited him from the
years
U.S. And I mean, good God, when is this going to end?
Ingrid,
we have to get this over. We have to win. Win.
We have to win. Not only do we have to win for the sake of justice and truth, we also have to win for the future of humanity, because if these people continue on, this will be worse than any dystopian novel you ever read. It'll be the end of humanity. And I do believe
I agree. And our own conservatives, which I jokingly say that, are our biggest enemy.
Yeah.
The right wing is our biggest enemy. They are going to be the ones that make these Noah Hyde anti-Semitic laws, and we need to vote them out. We need to spread the word, and these people need to be taken behind the shed, if you know what I mean. Why That's all. I'll jump down and let someone else get up.
Thanks, Goose.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, buddy.
No,
all
no,
right,
no,
Dave. We got John.
Someday they'll be held before the courts of law
and given
true justice. Go ahead.
I hope so. John, where are you calling from?
John, calling from Ohio.
Okay, Ohio. John. Go ahead, buddy. You got the floor.
Yeah, just a quick question. Are there any meetups of patriots, white pride, whatever term you want to use, in the near future? Because one thing I know, and that's painfully obvious, Jews always stick together. I see everybody in our movement as lone rangers. There's no social cohesion with them, and they don't stick together. Do we have any meetups coming up? Or because they're always alone, they don't. That's why, it's a problem when they try to do something if they don't know each other and they're not connected. They can have a problem accomplishing anything. Jews never stay alone.
Well, everything,
whites always do.
That's a very, very good question, and it's appropriate question. And you're really getting to the core of why we're facing the existential threat and all humanity. And it's not just white people. It's Africans, right. It's Asians, it's Amerindians, it's everybody. Because this is an existential threat. And you have to understand the fact that they have created a false reality. I'll give you an example. Okay. So that would seem to be normal, what you said. Okay. Jews always stick together. They have thousands of organizations. Nobody ever complains about Jews sticking up for Jewish organizations and Jewish heritage and the Jewish state of Israel. And nobody ever says anything. The Jewish right to defend itself. Jewish civil rights, Jewish human rights. But you have to understand what we got to get over to people first is you can't even do that in the United States of America without them doxing people and destroying people's lives. Because anybody that you can't even have an organization, like if you wanted to have, I had an organization called the National Association for the Advancement of White People, just like the NAACP was the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. I mean, you couldn't even have an organization that defends the common rights, heritage, human rights, principal rights, non-discrimination, or opposed to discrimination against better qualified white people, or the persecution of whites for crimes they didn't commit, or the persecution of whites as they did with the Capitol issue. You can't even have an organization. And if you do, the Jews would very easily infiltrate it, or they'd have other people infiltrate it. They'd take pictures of everybody, and then they would claim this was a Nazi organization because we're all Nazis, whatever. No, the only real Nazis, only Nazis as described by Hollywood today, and this is so beautiful, it's so powerful an argument, is what Hollywood represents as Nazis, right? That's the real Nazis. But they represent everybody as Nazis. They would go and they would use their power in terms of these corporations to fire them, destroy their job. The people couldn't pay for their home mortgage. They couldn't pay for their education for their kids. They couldn't pay their rent. They couldn't pay for anything. I mean, it's like this is what they do. So we have to get it over to people that the problem is not so much our strategy. It's not about whether or not we get, band together and stick together and work for each other. And I agree with the fact we've got to do that. And we've got to do that the best we can. Now, the format's going to take place, that's a whole nother thing. Well, here's what I used to say. I mean, I used to tell people this years ago. I would always tell people in all of my speeches, in fact, including when I was running for governor, I would say, you know, I believe that I do believe in equal rights for all. And I do believe that European Americans must stand up to defend their heritage, their values, their traditions, their culture, you know, their democratic influence in their own country, and their actual numbers. Because if we're outnumbered, we're outvoted in our own country, all of our rights can be taken away from us. And if the media is controlled by people that hate us, what chance do we have for anything? But here's the situation. Unless you understand the Jewish question, and all this questions about whether we should stick together, this is what I would tell people in my talks. I would say, listen, I talked to somebody about this, and I would say, you need to join up in our organization, join our campaign, you know. We are joined, whatever group I was involved with at the time, whether it be the European Unity Rights Organization or the National Association of Advancement of White People. I said, we got to take part in all these things. We got to join together. And generally speaking, the first thing people would say to me is the same thing that you said, which is true. They said, well, you know, said I would do that, but man, what are we going to do? The problem is white people just don't stick together. We don't stick together. That's the problem we have. And so, you know what I'd always do? I'd look at the guy, and I did it in a kind way, but I'd look at him right in the eye, and I would say, sir, you're right. The problem we have right now is not only do we have the truth, but we don't sit together and fight for it and stand up for it, but we don't stick together. Blacks stick together. Jews stick together. Immigrants stick together. We just keep going on with this, right? Homosexuals stick together. We can have a gay rights parade, but we sure can't have a white rights parade. So what I said to him, I said, okay, you're right. We got a problem. I understand why you don't get involved, because the problem is whites won't sit together and you're going to feel like you don't have your back or somebody doesn't have your back. I said, okay then. But I have a question for you. What are you doing? And I ask all the listeners out there, wherever you are in Europe, America, Canada, anywhere in the world, what are you doing? Are you sticking together with other people who believe like you? Are you sticking together with other anti-Zionists, with other Europeans, with other Asians, with other people in your own countries, to defend your people, to defend your society, to defend your way of life? Do you defend your even very existence on this earth when we have a situation going toward robotics and tyrannies that are reaching out more powerfully and more dangerous than ever, controlling the mind? Google reaches all over the entire world. They control millions of votes. They can control millions of votes in every country where people have Google phones, or whether they have any other kind of phone, or whether they, you know, whether they have the encyclopedia that they use, Wikipedia, right? Which is run by Jews. The head of it gets $1 million prize from Israel. Big Zionist Jew, self-identified Jew. Listen, folks, it's like, what are you doing, folks? If nobody out there, and I've heard this a million times, nobody can complain about what are you doing unless you're doing something. So here's what I suggest. I suggest the first thing you do is some things you can do safely, and you're not going to lose your job, because I want you to keep your job. I want you to feed your wife and your children, or your husband and your children if you're a woman. I want you to make possible a future for your children. I want you to pass on a legacy to them, an inheritance to them. I want you to be organized. I really want you to do that. So what can you do? Well, the first thing you can do is everybody has ways. You can pass on cash. You could pass on money orders, which are totally anonymous. Go any dime store, go in any convenience gas station. You can buy a money order for 25 cents or 50 cents, $500 or $1,000. And they can, somebody can cash that anywhere with ID. You know, we can cash that. We can use it. We can defend it. And your name wouldn't even be on it. So there's ways to get money to people. So those of you, some of you people have your own business and you have some insulation there. And maybe you could find a way to even get some good business for your business, because if you have a good, suitable business, the truth is that people would like to support people who think like they do. Or you could do other things. There's other things you can do. And so you can give money and you can support people and you can also select people also politically and so forth to support. And that's the thing you can do. And then you can start also supporting other people on the, some of these peripheral issues, which are not really the Jewish issue, but it's about freedom of speech and freedom of thought. And you can organize for those things because those things are important too. But the point is, without going after the Jewish question, as a gentleman said a few minutes ago in this program, without going after the Jewish racist supremacist murderers, as Christ said, and they are murderers. How many Americans do you think they've murdered? A lot. How many? We've lost a couple million through the overdoses with the Sackler family.
Dave, we got a call lined up.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Yeah, before we get to that next call, just want to read something because it's specific to the question.
Sure.
You remember that lesbian Jewish cow, Kaplan, who sued the Charlottesville people? She was the one who...
Yeah.
Defeated the Defense of Marriage Act, that organism, that nasty creature. She was interviewed by some Jew paper when they first sued, or when they decided they were going to go after the Charlottesville people.
Mm-hmm.
Asked by a reporter what the ideal outcome of the lawsuit would be, Kaplan crowed, "We absolutely can and will bankrupt these groups. And then we will chase these people around for the rest of their lives. So if they try to buy a new home, we will put a lien on the home. If they get a new job, we will garnish their wages."
Now, of course.
This is what these
Jews they're doing is they're making slaves. But the Jews have always been slaveholders. If you get a chance, go to my Odyssey, watch the World Champions of Slavery. Just watch my video on the Jewish control of the slave trade. I also show some great scenes from the Ten Commandments. The great scene when Moses is in the thing, within, I guess, one of the, not the pyramid, but in the palace with Pharaoh. And Moses gives this great speech and says, as long as there are slaves, you know, by other people's holding, I'm going to stand up for my people and freedom. He just didn't happen to mention that Jews all during that whole period themselves owned slaves, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't make it up.
Gotta love Jewish Hollywood. Dave, we got our old buddy from Estonia. He finally is gracing us with his return. He's been away for months. Henry, you got the floor, buddy.
Hello.
What happened, Henry? Did you get married or something?
No, I got divorced.
What? I didn't know you were married.
Yeah, I was.
Well, I'm
no,
sorry
I'm joking.
To that.
I'm joking.
You're joking.
Okay. Yeah. I just had a comment.
You want to get married with and have a bunch of babies. It's about time. How old
are you? I know. I'm 31.
Oh, you're definitely. You got to keep going.
I'm too old. I'm too old already.
No, you're not. I mean, you still have some fertility left. No question about it, even though you drop about 10% every year. So you got to get going on that.
Yeah. Here in Estonia, we had in the parliament, we had a conference about should we be the first nation to confiscate Russian assets? And there was four experts. And two other of them had a Jewish background. One of them was Lawrence Tribe, and another one was Bill Browder. And they were so-called experts, but they had the same opinion that we should be the first people to confiscate Russian assets.
I know about Bill Browder, and I know about these other guys' tribe. What were they doing in Estonia? They're not from Estonia, though, are they?
They were speaking through Skype, I think.
There you go. I knew.
Maybe they were using the same platform that we are using.
Global. I mean, they just Jews. So in this country, Estonia doesn't have many Jews. They here they are.
1%.
Speaking to the main speakers.
1,800 people.
For this kind of thing, so that to try to get Estonians in a war with Russia.
And exactly.
And yet Russia could obviously hurt, you know, if we try to hurt Russia's
assets, but all experts here are saying that if Estonia goes to war with Russia, we are definitely going to win. There's no doubt about it that we are going to win Russia.
When is this insanity going to be cured?
We don't even have any weapons. The best weapons we have are automatic machine guns, because we gave everything to Ukraine. I think we've given more than any other country by like 3 times. If you look at the graphs, then Estonia has given the most, 3 times more than any next ones.
What's ironic about it is here, the Russia's not communist anymore, and Russia let their country go free. At one point, when Estonia was set free and let out of the Iron Curtain, the Russians withdrew their troops, withdrew their missiles, withdrew their tanks, withdrew their military, and said, "Good luck to you. Let's do trade. Let's do business. Let's be friends. We're not communist anymore. We believe in free speech. We believe in the right of people to have business, and we want to see good
and
trade."
Now they want to send. They seem to want to be the first people to send troops to Ukraine, like official Estonian troops to Ukraine. And they're talking about 100 troops, which is not a lot, but the precedent is what matters. And so they're going to start the war.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's so sad. It's always the same story. And
I remember you told me like a year ago when I called that they're going to start the war, and I told you you're crazy. But now I'm like, yeah, they are. They're actually doing it.
They are crazy. And they act crazy, but the sad thing is that it's not their people on the front line dying. It's some of those people. Who are those people?
We're the smallest white nation on the planet. There's less than a million of Estonians in Estonia. So
you're one of the smallest.
You know, and so it's pretty easy to genocide us, I'd say.
How many people in Iceland? Maybe you have a few more than Iceland.
Iceland is an island. Yeah. I don't consider them like.
It's still a country, though.
Yeah, I guess Iceland is before us, but except for Iceland.
That's a small point. We don't have to worry about that.
We're continental Europe. We're the smallest.
I love Estonia. I remember your capital city. It's beautiful people, beautiful buildings and architecture.
Yeah, it's not going to be here anymore. In a few, you know.
Oh, it's sad, and these Jews are trying to get white people, the few white people we have in the world. They've got one quarter. We lose a quarter of our population every generation.
Birth rates here are 0.4. Exactly. They're stably around Europe, the same pretty much.
Yeah. So, and that's terrible. So they're losing at least a quarter of their population every generation, every 25 years. And that's unbelievable. And at the same time, they want us to go kill each other. Like, that's really going to solve our problems. This is insane. But the ironic thing, too, is that the Russians are just like Estonians. I've known so many Russians. I've known so many Estonians. I've known so many Latvians.
Maybe even more cultured, in my experience.
Sometimes they are. Because the Russians have such a rich intellectual tradition, of Christian tradition. I mean, look at the literature. that Russia has in the Russian language.
Yeah, they're considered the greatest in the world, literature-wise.
Well, usually the English language is considered the greatest literature, but I agree with you.
I've heard a lot of people say, like, Russians are the greatest writers.
A lot of people, yeah. Well, they do say that Russians are, and they do have some of the greatest writers.
Dostoevsky and...
I won't disagree with that. I love the way the Russians are, but if you look at the richness and the incredible diversity of the English language.
They were first in space as well, you know.
Well, they were.
So even science-wise, not just arts.
I'm not trying to refute you. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. I'm just enriching the conversation.
That's right. But there's many different aspects of it. But the Russian language is rich, and Russian culture is rich, and Russian scientific tradition is rich, Russian military tradition is rich. And the roots.
The only weak side they have is they have negative birth rates as well.
They do have negative, but they're not quite as bad as Estonia's right now, but they're getting bad.
I think even a little bit worse, actually. I think it's the third year that it's the lowest in lowest birth rates in Estonia for over 100 years since the recordings began in 1919, I think.
Right.
We have they're saying like this year or next year we're gonna have less than 10,000 new people born every year.
All right, Henry. Well, hey, thanks, buddy. We'll get you back in. All right.
Yeah. Well, okay, Henry. It was great having you on the show again. It's good talking to you. I'm gonna have to depart now, Dave, for a minute.
How dare you? We got one last caller.
Well, I got a call from my daughter who I need to talk to.
Ah, okay. I got you.
Sorry about that.
No, that's
okay. If my daughter can hold on a moment, I'll take the last caller.
Yes. See if she can.
Oh, she's going to call me back. It's okay.
Okay, good. All right.
That was nice of her to do that. Okay.
Yes. Thanks. Yeah, she's not like Slattery who keeps calling back. This is her first time, right? So she didn't know, really, right?
No, she didn't.
Give me her number at the end of the show. I need to call her. Okay. Lancastrian Jack, my good man from across the pond. How are you this evening?
My good fellow. How are you?
Yes. I'm good. What's on your mind, Jack?
Well, we've only got a minute left. Let me just say quickly, Dave, that before I talk to Dr. Duke, I listened to your show last week, you know, with NNR.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I loved your passion. At one point, I don't want to embarrass you, Dave, but you referred to, in your passion, you referred to Joe Biden as, and I quote, a piece of fuck. I'm not sure what that means. But let me go to Dr. Duke.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I was thinking, Dr. Duke, about Solzhenitsyn's great quote, you know, when he said about Bolsheviks were not Russians and it's the greatest human slaughter of all time, and the fact that most of the world's ignorant is proof that the global media is in the hands of the perpetrators. And what's ironic to me, Dr. Duke, is that quote itself, people are, you know, the world's media is ignorant of that very quote.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're familiar with that quote, aren't you, Dr. Duke, on a personal level?
I'm the first one I got a recording of the quote. I gave it out to people in Russia, and that's where the quote comes from.
Yeah, he said it to you, didn't he, I think?
He said it to me and a whole group of people.
But doesn't it say everything, Dr. Duke, that no one even knows about that quote? You think about Churchill's quotes about we'll find on the beaches and so on, and yet no one knows that. To me, Solzhenitsyn's the greatest author since Tolstoy, since Dostoevsky, and no one knows that is probably the most profound thing he ever said, and he was a great, great man. I think it's so sad that no one knows about that quote. You know, to say the world is...
This is exact. Let me give you the exact quote because your audience needs to hear it. We've got 5 minutes before the show's over, so let's just give me the quote, and you'd enjoy hearing it again. I know the quote almost by heart. It goes, let me see if I can remember it, because it made a big impression on me when he spoke. You must understand. This is Alexander Solzhenitsyn, by the way. You must understand. The leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of human remorse. He goes on, it cannot be overstated. Bolshevism committed the greatest human slaughter of all time. The fact that most of the world's ignorant and uncaring about this enormous crime is proof that the global media is in the hands of the perpetrators. Alexander Solzhenitsyn. That's a powerful quote. That's one of my favorite quotes of all time.
Yeah, I think when we do become familiar, when the global media becomes familiar with that, well, of course they are already familiar with it, but they'll never talk about it. But when that is aired finally, and we the world itself, the public, becomes familiar with it, maybe we've turned the corner by then.
And then you get the quotes from the Israelis, right? And Solzhenitsyn's condemned, you know, as an anti-Semite and everything. And you get the quotes by Netanyahu talking about Saul and killing the men, women, and children of the Amalekites, right? And then you have the other guy talking about how that we're going to, you know, we're going to put the whole Gaza, which is 2.4 million people, under siege. No food, no water, no medicine, no electricity, no telephone.
Incredible.
I mean, you can't make it up. I mean, it's just, and talk about genocidal intent. What happens to 2.4 million people? This is a desert kingdom. This is like a concentration camp.
Dave, we're going to have to wrap it up. Jack, thank you, my friend.
You got
thank you, Michael.
We'll see. Okay, thank you, Jack.
Thank you for your input. That was great.
Okay, Dave, are we next week is Easter?
Well, I'm not stopping for Easter. Easter's an important day.
All right. Well, there you go. All those
unless you got something you got to do then too. If you're going to go hunting Easter eggs or something, that's different. It's okay.
No, none of that. Okay, so the show's on next week. Dave, let the listeners know where they can hear you.
Okay, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, at rentsradio.com, rents.com, R-E-N-S-E. Also, you can find my archives at davidduke.com, and I'm at Real David Duke on Gab, at Real David Duke on Gab, and my Odyssey. Check out my videos. There's...
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.